Welcome. Mexico is buzzing after a 1-0 upset over the defending world champions. Did Mexico win or did Germany lose? We are here to break down Germany's opening loss with the help of Deutsche Welle journalist Heiko Flores. Then Matt and I are going to talk about our favorite narratives of the World Cup so far, including some other giants falling flat in the first round. This is the World Cup from the Tribune. Davis van Opdorp here with Matt Ford in the studio, and down the line for the first time on the podcast, he has two passports. He can speak three languages. It's Heiko Flores. Heiko, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, doing great. Feeling like a World Cup champ, if you might want to say that in a way.
Yeah, so talk about it. We want to talk about this game, I think, first from a Mexico standpoint, because, I mean, how big of an upset is this for you? Is this one of the best victories you've seen as a fan of the Mexican national team?
Yes, definitely. This is probably what has been probably the biggest game I have ever seen from the Mexican national team. I've been following them ever since I was born. I was born in Mexico, and it has always been the team I follow. And the best Mexican team I had seen so far wasn't during the 2005 Confederations Cup. And it was a team that played exactly how Mexico played yesterday. They were not afraid to go and fight opportunities, try to find the game themselves, trying to fight all those balls they can. And yesterday, that has been probably the best performance I have seen from a Mexican squad or a Mexican side.
Yeah.
And it's a huge upset. Yeah.
What impressed you the most about Mexico? Because the one thing that I saw that was really fascinating was that Carlos Vela was actually marking somebody.
Yes, I think the Carlos Vela was really impressive in the way that he's usually a player that is going often into the attack, but he did a great labor trying to protect the midfield, in this case Toni Kroos, and they were able to shut down the midfield real quick. Mexico played with a 4-2-3-1. Whenever they went on the offensive, but they were able to switch real quickly into a 4-3-3 whenever they were not on the ball. And that gave them the advantage of being able to cover that midfield. So they were able to suffocate what was either Toni Kroos or Sami Khedira. They were just able to suffocate any of their chances. And to be honest, I think the player that impressed me the most yesterday has to be Hector Herrera. The guy was impressive. He's been doing great at Porto this past season. But he's reached his prime, I think. And he's a player that even since last World Cup, 2014, we had been talking about him and being one of those players that could stand out for the Mexican national team. But this is a time, I think his time has finally come. And yesterday he just definitely proved that he has that raw talent that a lot of Mexicans were expecting from a lot of the players. But he's approved that it does exist, and he's a player of that standard.
Matt, how surprised were you with the end result? Maybe not necessarily with how the result came about, but with the actual end result.
Obviously surprised at the result, I think, overall. No one expected the world champions to be going into that and coming out of the first game with a 1-0 defeat, but having watched the 90 minutes, and even from the first 15, 20 minutes, it was clear what sort of game plan Mexico would come into the game with, and Germany had absolutely no answer to it. Heiko already spoke about how impressive Herrera was there in midfield, his midfield partner Guardado in there as well. Between the two of them, they won that midfield battle against Toni Kroos and Sami Khedira with surprising ease. I was going to ask Heiko as well there. In addition to those, I think what really caught the Germans off guard was the pace with which Mexico counter-attacked, whether it was Lozano, whether it was Vela, whether it was Layún. Was that part of the plan, Heiko? Is that what Mexican fans expected from the team going into the game?
Yeah, I think the pace was definitely a factor here. We know that players like Chucky Lozano, he just has that speed, that pace, and he has those bursts that he can just go and he can do a 30 to 40-meter sprint in a short amount of time, and that was exactly what was going to be one of the factors for Mexico going up front. On the other side, Layún, who normally does not play in the position he played yesterday, it was a big surprise for a lot of people because normally he plays more of a defensive role. However, he does have a tendency of going into the attack, and Juan Carlos Osorio, Mexico's coach, was able to pretty much use that opportunity of having him in a different position of what he is usually used to, due to his speed, due to that pace. So Mexico is waiting to have those spaces and exploit them, the space that they had. I mean, against central defenders such as Mats Hummels or Jérôme Boateng, pace and speed was going to be the factor that that could change exactly what we saw yesterday, seeing those the way Mexico was able to score that goal. They were that was part of the game plan all along, and it's I mean, now the sky's the limit for the Mexican national team. It seems at the end of the day, this is just one game, right? So so it's important to keep a level headed and see what they can do against Korea.
What was the general reaction that you saw from Mexico, you think, Heiko, from what you've seen around?
Well, it's definitely a surprise. I there's no doubt about that. It was especially because Juan Carlos Osorio is so used to not using the same starting 11 ever. So this is the first time that we as fans or as just spectators were able to see this 11 playing with each other. What was so surprising is that this 11 was able to work so well with each other, and without ever having that real praxis or that experience themselves against a real rival. I mean, we saw them play their last game before the World Cup against Denmark in Denmark. They lost 2-0. They played a first half where the team looked strong, but nothing far too impressive or away from the ordinary, and then the second half, they just looked waffle. They ended up losing the game 2-0. So it comes definitely as a surprise to be able to not only beat Germany, but the way to hold them off. I think Juan Carlos Osorio did an excellent job during the second half. He went into a defensive mode completely, which I thought it was quite risky, to be honest. I felt it was really hard to keep 45 minutes to just play defensively for the most part. I mean, they had a lot of chances also that Mexico didn't capitalize on. The game could have easily gone 2-0, 3-0.
Heiko, even before kickoff, there was a headline in Die Welt in Germany, which I'm not sure how many people in Mexico saw it. It seemed to get a little bit of traction on social media with Die Welt saying that today we're the ones building the wall, Mexico, with an image of a bricked-up goal frame with Manuel Neuer. Not sure how that went down politically in Mexico. Did you hear much about that, or yeah, what were the reactions to that?
Well, I mean, when it comes to social media, the problem there, I think it has a big the Mexican national team has a lot of following also in the United States. So I think through Twitter in English, I think the language barrier is definite there. Of course, Die Welt has their cover in German, and some people, as you mentioned, went ahead and tweeted those covers and just wrote what it was in either in English or in Spanish. So there were a lot of people tweeting that out. But I mean, most Mexicans, we tend to have some sort of sense of humor. So we didn't take that into a negative side of it, especially because Mexico ended up winning. So what I did see in social media is a lot of people saying, hey, wait a minute, we have the wall. In this case, people were talking about Guillermo Ochoa, our goalie, our goalkeeper, who actually was able to keep out, there was a great free kick shot from Toni Kroos, he was able to be the man of the hour at that time. So, I mean, the reaction was more along the lines of, okay, well, you guys want to say that you guys are building the wall. We already have a wall.
Yeah,
so
Memo Ochoa seems to come up big in those big tournaments, doesn't he?
Yes, he did that back in 2014 when Mexico played against Brazil. They were able to hold off Brazil at home. It was a 0-0, where Neymar had many, many chances in front of Memo Ochoa, and Memo Ochoa was able to hold those all of his attacks back. And, I mean, it happened again against Germany. So Memo Ochoa, unfortunately, he's always been an underrated keeper. He's the only goalkeeper to play outside of Mexico. So he plays at Standard Diez for the time being. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. He's a little bit older now, but I wouldn't be surprised if he will finally get his shot at a bigger club in Europe.
All right, let's move on to Germany now, because obviously this means there's a lot of ramifications to this loss. We'll get to a minute, but Matt, were you surprised that Löw didn't really do anything to counteract the fact that Mexico was basically dominating them on the wings and being able to basically put it out wide frequently because Joshua Kimmich and Marvin Plettenhardt were playing so high?
Yeah, well, like I said, the problem was evident as early as the first few minutes. I thought, ironically, the gaps were being left by precisely the one player who arguably did give Germany a little bit of creativity up front, and that, in the first half especially, was Joshua Kimmich. But, of course, whenever he got forward, it left those huge gaps, especially at right-back, which Mexico were able to exploit. We also mentioned the ease with which Guardado and Herrera were able to win that battle with Cadeira and Cruz in the middle. That frequently.
Yeah, Carlos Vela was also man marking Cruz, yeah. And I think that was a huge impact on the way that Germany was able to build up their play.
By taking the midfield out of the game, they left Hummels and Boateng exposed on so many occasions, and that became evident so early on. And so it is surprising that Löw didn't make changes until arguably it was far too late. It was the final 10 minutes before he brought Gomez and Julian Brandt on. And even in those 10 minutes, Germany then had a couple of shots on goal. Gomez had a header which went just over, and obviously Brandt had a late volley which clipped off the post. But it was too little, too late. Other chances of note, you're only thinking really of the Joshua Kimmich overhead kick, which, as impressive as it was, you have to ask, what on earth was Joshua Kimmich doing in the box anyway at that point? It points to a certain complete lack of plan on the part of Germany, and you know that's to Mexico's credit. I don't think Mexico played precisely the way Germany expected them to. I think Löw expected Mexico to press really, really high, but in fact Mexico let Germany come onto them, pressed in their own half, and then broke really, really quickly, catching them off guard when Germany only had 2 men at the back. So that must have been pleasing from a Mexican point of view, Echo.
I do think that probably even Germany underestimated Mexico. As I said, it's also a surprise for Mexico themselves that they were able to get this result. I mean, at least for us, the spectators, I think a lot of the players have been talking about that they've been working with their mentality. They've been working with a psychologist in the team, and that mentality has changed. It was fundamental for them to go out there and did what they did yesterday. But definitely, it's just one of those things where they needed to have that sort of positive mentality in order to be able to achieve that. But it, as mentioned before, it does come as a surprise to be able to get that result. What did happen is that, as I said, I feel that even Germany and Joachim Löw, he probably underestimated the Mexicans' ability to actually go up front and take the game toe-to-toe as they actually did. Holding back in Germany for 45 minutes during the second half, I felt it was a risky move. It paid off at the end. Before the game, I thought the biggest result Mexico could get was probably a draw.
I think, by the time Mexico sat back in the second half, it seemed they were doing that out of pure exhaustion. And they seemed to have put so much into those counterattacks in the first half that I'm not really sure how they could have continued that in the second. But given how toothless Germany then proved to be, perhaps with the exception of Royce included after he came on, you never really felt that Mexico were under so much pressure.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Heiko, because... Germany, if you look at the statistics, Germany had 26 shots and I'm not sure how many of those were on goal, but it seems...
I'm not sure how many of those were inside the box. I mean, that comes to me that's quite surprising to me. A lot of them were quite long range, weren't they?
When Mexico went into their defensive set for the last half an hour or so for the game, was there ever a moment that you were afraid that they were going to basically not be able to hold on to the 3 points?
I really did not believe they were going to be able to hold on to those 3 points, to be honest. Up until the 85th minute, that's when I realized, wow, they can actually do this.
And so it still took to the 85th minute for you to believe that you could get the 3 points.
And I think that's in part because I have seen this Mexican team play so often, and that's exactly what happened during the 2014 World Cup. Let's not forget Mexico took the game to the Netherlands, and they were playing toe-to-toe with them as well. They went up 1-0, and then they started playing defensively, and that's when Mexico came down, and that was the end of the World Cup story for us back in 2014. So, I mean, I had those those really fresh memories there yesterday when I was watching that game. And it was until the 85th minute that I realized this is doable. And Germany, I mean, it also took some time to realize, hey, I need to make some changes. I think his first change came, I mean, after Marco Reus. I felt the Marco Reus change should have come in way earlier than it happened. It didn't, but then after that, it never really seemed like he was ready to actually go all out until, I mean, when it was already too late. As I said, the 85th minute, that's when I felt, okay, this is doable. And that's when I first saw him trying to do something. And it was just not enough time for Germany to react. And I think if you're the world champion and you want to be able to retain your title, then you have to be able to, in a way, not only be able to keep that, not only be able to sorry, I lost my train of thought. If you're the world champion, you're not able to have the performance you had yesterday. You need to be able to go out and have more of a dynamic game, be able to be proactive and not reactive.
Yes, so speaking of being proactive, they had a closed-door training session today in Russia. The players that played yesterday are getting a little bit more rest, and the coaches are basically trying to break down the game to see what went wrong. Where does this leave this Germany team? Because, I mean, one could easily expect that someone like Sami Khedira could start the next game, even though he had an absolute stinker, and you could still expect Marco Reus maybe to even sit on the bench. So what reactions do you think that Joachim Löw should take with him into this next game?
If they're looking at breaking down what went wrong, then I hope they're going to include two or three closed training sessions to focus on it, because I think that's how much time they're going to need to go through everything that did go wrong. We've already touched on the midfield. We've already touched on the fullbacks getting too high up the pitch. I think what we haven't mentioned so far will be some of the internal communication, which I think has always been a problem. Mats Hummels mentioned it after the game. Quite a veiled criticism, actually, wasn't it? He mentioned that, yeah, Jerome Boateng and I were exposed, which we've spoken about quite a lot in the team, but it doesn't seem to have been taken on board. I'm not sure who that was directed at exactly, but that suggests that something's not quite right with the communication within the camp. I thought there's been so much hype around Timo Werner going into the competition, and I'm not blaming this on him necessarily. I don't think he was used correctly. It was almost as if Germany were playing with him up front for the first time, as if he was a complete stranger. We all know how he plays. The German players know how he plays. He's not a target man. He's not big in stature. He's quick. He plays off the shoulder. He thrives off those balls in behind. So what were Germany doing? Launching crosses in from the right back and the full back, which would have worked well if Gomez was up there, but he only came on for the last 10 minutes. So it just seemed there was a complete mismatch of tactical approaches, which hadn't really been thought through. I thought it was surprising.
I think one thing that the Germany players will have to also remember, and this is actually what stuck with me, it's a comment I've heard before from in another sport, but basically Germany can't expect things will be better just because they're Germany. They have to be proactive. They have to try to come into their next game on the front foot, because if they don't, I mean, if you look at the group, they could easily finish second, or they could very conceivably do what Spain did 4 years ago and not make it out of the group stage.
And Italy before them and France before them, so it wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah, so, but you also look at, if you look at the winner of this group is going to face the second place team in Group E, which is the group with Brazil, Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. And Brazil, even though they lost, they could still conceivably win that group. So if Germany even finished second, they could be looking at Brazil, who beat them in a friendly in March, playing them in the round of 16. And that is not a very attractive draw for them. Heko, before we let you go, how do you feel about Mexico's chances now that they've won?
Well, as mentioned, we were not expecting to get those 3 points out of that match. So now that you have those 3 points, I mean, we always knew that Mexico was going to fight against Sweden and Korea to get those 6 points to be able to have a chance to get out of the group. Now that you have those 3 points in the bag, being number one out of the group will be definitely the goal that Juan Carlos Osorio and his team will have in mind. And that way they can avoid what possibly could be Brazil. Because once you see a Brazilian team that gets into the gear of things, of course, yesterday playing against Switzerland 1-1 is not too impressive from their side. But once they get back in gear, and once they have more games that, to the point that they can get to the round of 16, which most likely they will be the ones, or it can be expected that they will be the ones as number one in their group, of course you want to avoid that team. Going out and into the round of 16 as the number one team in your group is what every team is expecting to do or wants to do in order to have a better chance at getting further into the quarterfinals. Let's not forget, Mexico has not made it into the quarterfinals since 1986. So it's been ages, and Mexico is definitely trying. That's definitely the goal, at least getting into the quarterfinals. And who knows, maybe they can beat the record of 1986 or 1970, which both World Cups were played in Mexico, and they will be actually to be able to get into the semifinals. And I think if they play their cards right, like they did yesterday, as I said before, the sky's the limit for Mexico.
Yeah, semifinals. Already on the Mexico. Everybody hop on the Mexico bandwagon with Heiko before it leaves.
Jesus, no, I wouldn't call it like that. I'm just saying, let's see. What I saw yesterday was really positive. However, we need to go game by game, and Korea's up next. And I don't know. Juan Carlos Osorio is known to do a lot of rotations in his squad, so we'll have to wait and see. Don't want to get my hopes up that much. But yes, what I saw yesterday left me very satisfied.
All right, Matt, Germany has made it to the semifinals in basically every World Cup that I can conceivably remember. Do you think that that is now in doubt after this first performance, or do you think that they can still recover and have a long run into this tournament?
The question can be answered that simply as, you know, yes or no, semi-final or not. The fact is, a lot of things have to change. We've run through them on the podcast already. And the question is Löw going to be in a position to do that? It's not ideal anyway, making sort of wholesale tactical changes or personnel changes in the middle of a tournament. It's a bit reactionary. It's not in Joachim Löw's way of working either. So relatively abnormal for him if he did that, but I don't think he's got much of a choice. Things have to change. Like you said, it's not enough just to go into tournaments expecting that it'll all be okay. They came into this tournament on the back of a series of warm-up games, of which they only won one out of six, if my maths and memory serve me correctly. And of course, in those games, they had the excuse of saying, okay, well, no, Germany are a tournament team, Germany will perform when it matters. Well, that's not the case now, is it? You've got three group games, one of them's already gone, and they've lost it, so the pressure's on to get 6 points from the next two. And if they perform like that, I think, especially against Sweden, who, as we said, overcame Italy in qualification to qualify for this, the likes of Emil Forsberg there as well. So they've got creative players, they're not going to be pushovers, so it won't be an easy day out for Germany there either. No, there are certainly problems. Fitness could be an issue as well there. I think it was surprising that Kadeva looked so out of breath towards the end. Timo Werner, I'm not sure if he was struggling with a slight knee injury as well, but also looked quite tired towards the end of the game. They couldn't do that much more wrong than perhaps starting Roy, bringing on the likes of Rudy or Goretzka. Perhaps a little bit more youth, a bit more pace at the back with Zula perhaps. Changes certainly wouldn't do them any harm.
Heiko, do you think Germany is going to make the semifinals again?
I mean, you cannot forget that Germany are Germany. At the same time, yeah, they may have started this tournament with the left foot, but I wouldn't just scratch them off that easily. As mentioned, I mean, they can still they're still the favorites to be able to make it out into the round of 16 out of their group, even on top of Mexico, even after what we saw yesterday. So if Germany are able to go out as a second in the group, I mean, once it gets into the round of 16 and further, to be honest, it's more of a coin toss. So yes, I still wouldn't give up hopes on this German team. They do have a lot of issues that they need to address, as mentioned before. But I wouldn't scratch them off yet.
All right, that's Heiko Flores. Heiko, what's your Twitter handle so people can follow you?
That's Heiko 90. That's HECKO90.
All right, thanks a lot, Heiko, and we'll be back shortly to talk some more World Cup. All right, so now that we've talked a lot about Germany, and I know there's a lot of Germany topics that we probably haven't addressed, but if you don't think that we've addressed it, you can respond to us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast, or just leave a comment on our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page. But we're going to move on to some other narratives that we thought are, have been interesting about the group stage so far. Of course, we still have Group G play to go and Group H play, so the first round of matches isn't done. But Matt, what have you taken away from this these first few matches so far?
Well, I think the exception of the Spain and Portugal game aside, which was a game of genuine high quality and high class, both on a team level and from several individuals during that game, some of the top teams haven't really performed, have they? Obviously, we've covered Germany in the first 20 minutes or so there. But apart from that, obviously, we saw Brazil last night against Switzerland, who I thought, apart from the opening 20 minutes, definitely weren't as free-flowing as I expected. Fantastic goal from Coutinho, must be said, and surely the goal of the tournament already. And we've had some good ones, haven't we, so far? Before that, France against Australia, obviously they came away... did that finish 1-1?
No, it was 2-1.
Finished 2-1, didn't
they?
They
barely got by.
Not impressive, though, obviously. I think they've got the technology to thank as well, haven't they, in the end? Obviously, no arguments at all about Paul Pogba's going over the line. That's black and white, and that's part of the issue. The VAR's not quite black and white, is it? And I think debates have continued regarding the penalty. But yeah, it's with the amount of talent that Deschamps has at his disposal there, I thought, okay, yeah, credit to Australia. They sat deep, defended really, really well. I thought they were tenacious, really well organised. Matthew Lecky already picking up a yellow card and almost getting sent off as well. So credit to them, but the amount of firepower and creativity that France have there going forward, you do expect more. So I want to see more from France as the tournament goes on, because there's an incredible amount of potential there. Argentina as well, not really turning up. Obviously, we can look at it from a Ronaldo versus Messi point of view, can't we?
And okay, I'll get probably, to that in my takeaway in a minute.
That's probably a little bit oversimplifying things, but it's actually quite a good analogy, really, the fact that Ronaldo was able to take the world by storm like he did with a hat-trick and a last-minute free kick, and Messi misses a pen.
But let me get on to my first narrative, too, because I think that is a huge topic, because you saw Cristiano Ronaldo in one of the best group stage games in a World Cup I think I've ever seen. Of course, I haven't seen that many. I'm not as old as some of our other viewers may be, and I don't know any of the games from the 70s or 80s. But his performance was incredible. Now, he was helped along by the fact that he did draw a penalty by maybe overacting a little bit, although I'm not debating the fact that it was a penalty. His second goal was a very rare David De Gea mistake, and his free kick, it was the first free kick he had put in the back of the net in 45 tries. But by the same token, he was there for his country when he needed him, and Lionel Messi simply was not. Now, credit to Iceland for making sure that Lionel Messi wasn't necessarily a factor.
And
but
a huge credit to Alfred Finnbogason as well.
For yeah.
The Bundesliga's first scorer at the World Cup, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, but in some ways, Messi has just as much, if not more, to work with than Cristiano Ronaldo does. I mean, Portugal have for a long time has always looked to Ronaldo to try to make something happen, whereas Argentina have players of individual quality that can basically do things on their own and not necessarily need Messi all the time. I think that this I said going into this tournament that this was an important one for Lionel Messi, because he's basically done everything else in his career besides win a World Cup, and this may be his last one as well. He's already retired, and he has obviously come out of retirement, but he's still actually never won an international trophy, and Cristiano Ronaldo has. So this tournament could be maybe a one last defining moment in the rivalry between these two great players. And I have to say that Cristiano Ronaldo is coming out way on top. Now, of course, it's only been one game. I mean, Messi could have a huge game against Nigeria and we might completely forget about it. But but right now, he's the one of the two that has a lot to show in this World Cup.
Yeah, I think definitely for those who like to take the whole Ronaldo-Messi debate seriously. It's a feather in the cap for those Ronaldo fans, I suppose. Personally, I think it's all. I think that it's.
They're both great. I think we can both be great.
We can oversimplify it, can't we? I think we both need to appreciate. We need to appreciate that we're all living at a time where we've all had the pleasure of watching two absolutely outstanding players. But just purely just to focus on Ronaldo and the focus and the sheer willpower and belief and the mentality to stand there over that ball with, what was it, 5-6 minutes remaining in a huge game on one of the biggest stages in the world, with a Spanish wall in front of him, one of the best goalkeepers in the world in David De Gea behind that, knowing that this has got to go in the back of the net. And you could see it was tunnel vision, the way he stood there telling himself, this is going in. Never mind the fact that I've had, 40-odd free kick attempts at World Cups or whatever the stat was, and I've not put one in yet. Never mind that, just this is going in, and I believe I can do it because I've done it 1,000 times in training, and this is just what I do. It's difficult to put into words. The man has an incredible amount of self-belief and willpower and a winning mentality, and it really is incredibly, incredibly impressive. So, yeah, it was a pleasure to watch it. It really was.
What else did you like about the opening rounds? I mean, we saw a decent amount of upsets so far in the group stage.
Yeah, it's always interesting. It's always a mixture between, as you see these teams that you know absolutely nothing about, and teams which come into the tournament with no expectations. I was pleased for Russia in the opening game with a 5-0 win. I think the hosts seem to be a little bit wary of the fact that perhaps the team's getting on a little bit.
So, to jet in real quick, a lot of people said that they could be the worst host ever to play at a World Cup.
I think that definitely. Wider
I think
than
that was totally hyperbolic to say.
South Africa were worse than that.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at from a personal point of view, from the United States, and when they hosted the World Cup at the time, many people probably said at the time that they were the worst country to host a tournament. And then you also consider South Korea and Japan, who hadn't really developed the players that they have now. I mean, to say that Russia is to come up into with the notion that Russia wasn't going to be a good team, I think that was a little jumping the gun.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they did really well to take advantage of what really was a genuinely poor Saudi Arabia side, and five goals, including that two stunning late ones from Cheryshev and Golovin, wasn't it, I think, with the free kick. Pleased for them. It's always good. The World Cup always benefits when the host team does well. The fans get up for it, the atmosphere is better in the host cities, and if they get out of the group stage, that'll do the World Cup as a tournament as a whole really, really well. However, just dwelling on Saudi Arabia and on that note also, Morocco and Iran, which is the following game the next day, seen a lot of criticism going around that, regarding the quality of the games, basically, the quality on offer from those sides, and basically questioning, well, if we have these games at a World Cup now, which are so obviously lacking in quality, and there's no way around that, they were lacking in quality, what's it going to be like when we expand it to a 48-team tournament, as it will be from, I think, 2026 onwards? And I think the way to look at it is the two schools of thought, from a purely footballing and purely qualitative point of view, that wasn't anything good to watch. They weren't good games. The same could be said for the Uruguay-Egypt game as well, especially with Egypt without Mo Salah. If you were tuning into those games looking for high footballing quality, then that wasn't on show. I think the opposing argument to that, and the one which I think I subscribe to, is that that's not why we watch the World Cup, is it?
Yeah,
surely.
Who cares?
if you want to watch the very highest level of football in prowess, then the Champions League or the Premier League or the top of the Bundesliga is the place to look for that. Not the World Cup. The point of the World Cup is to see teams you've never seen before, to see the interaction and the atmosphere among the different sets of fans in the centre of Moscow, which have been incredible to see, even in the opening 4 or 5 days. Some of the pictures coming out of Russia have been brilliant. You've got groups of fans who would normally, you think, have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Iranians bouncing around the streets around Red Square with Colombians. It's just incredible to see, and for me that's what the World Cup's about. It's not about the quality of football on show, at least not at this point. When it gets to the quarterfinals, semi-finals, the final, I think, yeah, by that point you do expect that you are seeing some of the best teams in the world. Leave quality football to club competitions and enjoy the World Cup for what it is. And I must admit, I'm starting to convince myself that a 48-team World Cup, yeah, why not? The more the merrier.
Well, actually, if you look at it, I mean, the number of games will increase overall, but it's not like any team is going to, if you look at the structure of the tournament, no, it's not like the teams will be playing more games. So that argument also doesn't bear any fruit, because it's not like Germany are going to tucker themselves out in the group stage.
There'll be one extra round, won't there?
But there will be an extra round, but the group stage will be smaller.
It's not a massive increase in games.
No, but the group stage will be smaller. I mean, overall the games will increase, but the group stage is going to be only two games for each team, and it's going to be round robin. So I mean, if they doubled the size, so make it a 64-team tournament and basically make it a March Madness involving football teams, then, yeah, maybe it gets out of hand. But you could see, I mean, even with the Euros increasing their field 4 or 2 years ago, a team like Iceland really
It's not like Iceland haven't been a good addition, and they've proven it in both tournaments so far.
Yeah, I mean, and the Will Grigg on fire chant basically went viral. I mean, these are things that wouldn't happen if it wasn't...
That's the most important thing, David, yeah.
Yeah, but like you said, that's what matters at major tournaments, exactly. not necessarily the quality of the football. So I definitely agree with you there. I mean, another takeaway that I had was, you mentioned France before. I'm not buying the stock of Didier Deschamps anymore. I think, if there's any coach that performed worse in their first game than Joachim Löw, it was definitely Didier Deschamps. Because even though that France won, I mean, Australia, I might get a lot of angry messages from Australians on Twitter, but France really should be taking care of Australia. I mean, Christoph Kramer on ZDF, in Germany, he predicted 4-0 without hesitation. I predicted 3-0.
I think I did too, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and the fact that this game was even close to becoming a basically drop point opportunity for France, it is rather pathetic. I mean, you have Kylian Mbappe.
But something that Joachim Löw has actually done really, really well over the years, having that huge pool of talent at his disposal, but being able to have a clear enough managerial philosophy, not just a philosophy, but the philosophy of an international manager, because it's a completely different job to managing at club level, to be able to separate and look past that huge pool of just pure talent and select the players which are going to fit into the system with the ultimate aim of performing well at 3-4 weeks in over a handful of games at a tournament. And on the evidence so far, you suggest that Didier Deschamps hasn't managed to do that. Huge amount of talent there in that French squad and among the French players who were left at home, but has Deschamps managed to mould them and apply that talent to a properly thought through system capable of breaking down defences like Australia's? No, on the evidence so far, that no, he's not.
I mean, you look at even left
to see an improvement there.
You even look at the inclusion of Ousmane Dembele, who, from my point of view, Leroy Sané has definitely deserves to be at the World Cup 10 times more than Ousmane Dembele does, because Leroy Sané has much more experience and is a much more disciplined player than Ousmane Dembele. And yet, because of his infatuating 10-second clip talent, Didier Deschamps decided to start him over more proven players, like even Florian Thauvin and Thomas Lemar and those players. I mean, they had more of a right to be in that team than Ousmane Dembele ever did. And if you're a player in France now, it almost doesn't matter what you do at the club level. Thauvin had a fantastic season at Marseille, and he, in terms of many metrics, had a better season than Ousmane Dembele did. And yet, when it comes down to it, I mean, Ousmane Dembele may have the better career than Florian Thauvin, but I mean, at the in a game like in a game where you're starting the youngest 11, you need players who have experience, who have the ability to look beyond, not just try to put their talent on the field, but also to try to put their experience on the field. And I think that's something that Didier Deschamps definitely deserves criticism for.
All right, that's enough World Cup talk for now. But remember, we'll have podcasts throughout the tournament, all the way up to the final if Germany are to make it that far. So be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. Also, be sure to like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Thanks again to Heco Flores. You can follow him on Twitter at Heco90. That's HECKO90. And of course, Matt Ford is at Matt_4D. And I'm at Davis_Fernando. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.